Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, do the Heat have a realistic chance at landing one of next summer's star free agents? ESPN doesn't seem to think so.
Plus, we'll discuss Miami's recent free agent signings and Chris Bosh opening up about the stress of joining the Heat in 2010. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and League at Large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
The Heat have had some recent additions to their training camp roster, and the narrative of Chris Bosh could soon be changing. But let's start today's show by talking about next year's free agency. ESPN recently published a piece where several of their writers forecasted where some of the top 2019 free agents will sign next summer. That group includes Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, Kawhi Leonard, and Jimmy Butler. And all of them, the Heat were only given a 3% chance to land Butler, a 0% chance, not even listed for any of the other guys. Now, this is far from scientific, and any number of things can happen between now and then. But are you surprised the Heat are being counted out for next summer's biggest names, David?
Honestly, I'm not. And it's kind of more a referendum on where the Heat currently stand as far as the NBA landscape is concerned. It's something you and I have talked about before, but the Heat's lack of a superstar on the surface makes them a very undesirable destination for another superstar. The reality is, when you're looking at free agency, it's not the same approach that we could have looked at in 2010 or in the 90s or aughts. It's about aligning yourself with another superstar player so that you can contend for a title, because that is the end-all be-all defining factor in a single player's career. And so when you're looking at the Heat and the roster is currently comprised, why would any of these players, either Leonard or Irving or Thompson, want to build their legacy and add more titles to their resume by joining a team that doesn't look like they're going to be in contention anytime soon? Now, the one team that stood out as far as the ESPN list is concerned was that a lot of writers or whomever projected where these free agents would sign listed New York as a desirable destination. I think that's pretty clear because the Knicks have been historically a designation for free agents throughout the league's history, to be honest with you. So that seems pretty consistent. And though Miami is viewed as a premier destination, or was at least for most of its tenure, I just don't know that that's currently how they're viewed right now. They're just a team of, you know, work shift players that do their jobs. Nobody that really stands out. A collection of really good role players and no superstar, obviously. So when you're looking at Butler and Irving, I think what's interesting is that a lot of people projected that they would play together next year, and that a lot of them thought that New York was that destination where they would both come together to play for David Fizdale next season. So that's an interesting option. Personally, I think Jimmy Butler is a better fit in Miami, and his link to Dwayne Wade, I believe, is a little bit stronger than whatever connection he has with Kyrie Irving. But then again, a lot, as you said, can change over the next year.
Well, yeah, and look, Kyrie is really good right now, and Dwayne Wade might not be around for a whole lot longer if he even does return. We still haven't gotten word at the time of us recording this as what the Wade's plans are. But look, the other more simplistic way to look at this is Miami just doesn't have cap space to sign any of these guys.
That's true.
So I think if you're an ESPN writer, you've got to who's forecasting this, or if you're anybody kind of looking at where next year's free agents are going to go. Well, a lot has to happen between now and next summer for Miami to even be in the conversation. Now, let's go down the line here. Kevin Durant already denied the Heat. I see no reason why he would come back to Miami, if he would ever even leave Golden State in the first place. Klay Thompson has recently said he wants to be a Warrior for life, and that's my impression of being around the team as well, is that Klay Thompson has no interest in leaving. Kyrie Irving has been tied to the Knicks here and there. He did mention Miami as a possible trade destination when he wanted out of Cleveland. So keep that in mind. If Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler do want to team up, is there a way for Miami to clear some cap space between now and then and sort of make a 2010 type of run at a not one star, but multiple stars
here? I hope we can convince David Fizdale to take on Tyler Johnson's contract in exchange for Kyrie Irving. I think that makes sense.
Kawhi Leonard, of course, has eyes on L.A., as you know, given the reports and the rumors and things. And, of course, he's with the Raptors right now, who are hoping to retain him by basically signing, giving all of his friends jobs on the staff. But
That was an interesting factor, though, right? They didn't project that he was going to be coming right. back to Toronto. So that's
they had him going to the Lakers,
right?
And so Miami again wasn't mentioned for either of those guys, who was given a 3% chance to land Jimmy Butler. Again, far from scientific, but I think the fact that they have no salary cap space and the fact that they've basically been denied by every big name free agent since LeBron, I think plays a part. And if you're the Heat, I don't want to put too much weight into this, but it does reflect where the Heat are as an organization, to kind of go back to what you're saying, a middling franchise without a big name recruiter.
Right.
What this says to me is that Miami, if they want to land a star, it's not going to be via free agency, and it kind of backs up what we've been saying on this podcast for the last few months. To get a star, they're going to have to trade for one. Absolutely. And that likely means parting with one of their more valuable assets, whether it be Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, or Bam Adebayo, or future draft picks that they now have at their disposal. And that's probably going to have to be the case if Miami lands one of these guys or another superstar. So I look at Jimmy Butler again, because I agree with you. Biscayne Butler should be a thing. Like, Jimmy Butler should be in South Beach. I think it's an awesome fit for him from not only a culture standpoint, but from a basketball standpoint. He fits. We had a mailbag question the other day about what position the Heat need to upgrade, and it's on the perimeter, and Jimmy Butler would certainly be an upgrade there. He can lead your offense. He can do a lot of things, and he's got that workman's-like attitude that the Heat like. So go after Jimmy Butler. Trade for him when you can, because chances are you're not going to be able to sign him in free agency. Jimmy Butler, whoever it might be, the Heat are probably going to have to target one of these guys if they want to land a superstar sooner rather than later. And I think Butler, out of all these guys, is the most realistic target if things don't work out in Minnesota.
Yeah. Listen, I'll add one more thing to that, because I think we've wrapped it up pretty neatly there. But one of the things that has stood out to me over the summer, and, you know, take it for what it is, but you see a lot of pictures of players around the league getting together for workouts. One picture that came out just this week shows not just LeBron James, but Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant and a couple of other players here and there taking a picture together after a workout. And conversely, what you see from Miami is Miami players staying together and working out together. Wayne Ellington with Dwayne Wade and James Johnson and Udonis Haslem, of course, leading the charge. I've voiced this before, and there's a concern here that Miami has created this really insular bubble that works really well for players that are currently on the team, but isn't necessarily conducive to recruiting players outside of it. Your best option at recruiting a player was Dwayne Wade. Those days are largely over, with the exception of perhaps Jimmy Butler. But right now, you don't have any other player that really connects well outside of that. I mean, we're not privy, you know, obviously nobody is, to the ins and outs of a player's social life. But for the most part, we don't really see that interaction between Heat players and players from around the league. It's just not as commonplace as we see from other teams. Mm-hmm. And that's a concern of mine, is that they're not going to necessarily have those friendships, those connections there, where they can say, hey, come with me, come to Miami, we can build something together. And obviously, you're right, there are things in place there. There are obstacles, not the least of which is a huge salary cap demand. You know, so there is not like there's a lot of money to throw at any premier free agents, but there's also not those kind of connections that could help grease the wheels a little bit.
And right. There is no Wade LeBron Bosch connection, right? That exists. I mean, Josh Richardson went to Tennessee. I mean, and he's from Oklahoma. That's not, you know, those aren't basketball hotbeds. Justice Winslow might be the best
chance with the Duke,
you know, with that Duke resume. But his best friend in the league outside of Miami is Grayson Allen. And, you know, whatever. So
I did say this before. I'm not sure.
And then there's Bam with Kentucky. Maybe there's a Kentucky.
Yeah, that's what I was hinting at. Yeah, Bam Adebayo. Yeah. With that Kentucky, there are so many players there. I'm not sure if he's connected to, say, like a John Wall or a Boogie Cousins or anybody else. But that's the hope, that maybe he can start improving the Heat player relations a little bit. You know, and that's assuming that he stays on the roster and he's not
the
player that you include for a big free agent or a big trade, rather.
Well, do any of Miami's recent free agent signings have a shot at making the team? We'll talk about that when we come back after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, Chris Bosch recently opened up about the stress that comes with playing with LeBron, and we'll talk about that later on, but let's get to these recent Heat signings. The Heat signed Marcus Lee out of Cal and Jarnell Stokes, two big men, to what amounts to two training camp deals. Of course, we still don't know what will happen with Dwayne Wade and Udonis Haslem, though we both believe they'll be back, but depending on what happens with those two situations, do you think either Marcus Lee or Jarnell Stokes has a future with the Heat?
With Stokes in particular, I think, you know, obviously there's a connection to the Heat before. He has played here prior. Josh Richardson tweeted something out when they announced the signing saying that it was good to have him back. You know, obviously he's a body that's familiar with the system, familiar with Spoelstra and some of the other players on the roster. So that's a comfort level that you can't overlook. But, you know, he's been in the league for 3 years, tried very hard to make it on a number of teams, Denver, Memphis, Miami, etc. Just can't seem to stick around. I think he's generously listed at 6'9". He's not that tall. And I just don't know that his skill set fits into what big men around the league are trying to do nowadays. I just don't see it. If anything, there's a hope that maybe Marcus Lee might be able to latch on to the Sioux Falls Skyforce and continue to develop his game that way. I see that as the more likely of the two making a long-term impact in Miami. I just don't see Stokes being able to contribute anything other than what he's shown throughout his limited career and limited skill set.
Yeah, I really like the Marcus Lee signing. I'm actually pretty excited about that one, although I'm probably a little biased because he went to Cal and played in, you know, which is 20 minutes away, and I've had a chance to, you know, be around him and watch him play. So I liked what I saw from him, though. And if I were to scout him, I would say that, look, there is some stretch five potential there, I think. And I tweeted this when the Heat first announced the signing. Heat fans might want to make Chris Bosh comparisons only because they have a similar frame. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Lee's best case scenario would be playing a similar role, though not nearly as good as Bosh, but playing a similar role as a stretch five. He's smart, works really hard, but he's a little thin. I think that you know, being small as a center is more of an issue in college basketball than it is in the NBA in a weird sense, because he is quick on his feet. He just needs to be a little more consistent defensively. Not a great rebounder, but can shoot the ball from the perimeter, is comfortable with the ball in his hands, and there's a lot of talent there. This is a guy who started his career at Kentucky.
Right.
And just because of Kentucky being Kentucky, didn't get the playing time that he hoped he would, but was a pretty high recruit. But if you're not one of the top 30 guys in high school, you're probably not going to play at Kentucky. So ended up transferring to Cal to get some playing time. And as we've seen from Cal in recent years with guys like Jaylen Brown, they tend to play better in the NBA than they do at Cal, just because they're a little bit old school, I think, in their approach to coaching, and just sort of their system is kind of more defense first, not a lot of offense happening there. So I like Marcus Lee, but to go back to Jarnell Stokes, I'm a little concerned that the Heat are kind of going back to retreads like Stokes and Briante Weber. It seems like they've kind of fallen into a comfort zone here. And
that's why I'm kind of hinting at what I said in the first segment, too. Yeah. Right? It's this insular. I mean, Heat culture is great for a marketing tool. It's also a dangerous kind of world to navigate in if you see yourself as being this organization that keeps together. If you want to see it as a family, that's fine. But occasionally, you have to let that family grow a little bit. And when there are members of that family that leave for a reason, well, you don't bring them back, you know, just because there are no other options. So it's
Miami's new additions are Marcus Lee and Duncan Robinson.
That's fine. That's fine.
No, it's not. That's awful. Two undrafted free agents.
You know, the Sioux Falls Skyforce need players too, so maybe there's potential there. I don't know. I mean, I keep thinking that maybe there is, you can't overlook that comfort level between Briante and Jarnell, that they're going to be able to fit in rather seamlessly there. I just know that there's not going to be an expectation from anybody that they're going to make this team. That doesn't seem likely. I mean, we talked about this in a previous mailbag about Briante. It's the same case with Jarnell. There's a reason why they haven't been able to latch on to teams. And, you know, there's the potential that maybe a year or two or five down the road, maybe something will click into place. I mean, this isn't to say that either Jarnell or Briante aren't working extremely hard. There's just more room for them to make up. They're lacking in the kind of skills necessary, particularly on offense, that would make them long-term contributors there. So, I mean,
I'll say this, though, for as a devil's advocate, just to try to see the other side of this. The Heat have been trying to, ever since basically LeBron left, have been turning over the roster quite frequently. Even last year, adding guys like Kelly Olynyk, adding Dwayne Wade back into the mix, adding a guy like Bam Adebayo. I mean, this is really, if you're the Heat and there's real, and you had no cap space, and really the only way to improve the team is through continuity, internal development, and just getting guys healthy. Maybe that's sort of the strategy here, is even at the lowest levels of the roster, the lowest rungs of what we have, even if it's really just, at the end of the day, G League guys, continuity is so important to us, and we feel that just having guys who know the system, that Eric Spoelstra doesn't have to go out and teach the Heat way to and all these things, maybe that's the strategy here. Maybe that's sort of the overarching theme, is let's just be together. Let's just be one insular family, and maybe we can improve that way, especially given the amount of turnover that there is in the Eastern Conference in particular. Their rosters are turning over now more than ever because of player movement and free agency. The Heat are the exception to that right now, in that they really didn't add anybody new. And so maybe that's the strategy here.
It's possible. Interestingly enough, both Stokes and Lee, the same age. They're both 24. So Stokes has already been in the league for 3 years, entering his fourth now with Miami. And Lee is fresh out of college, still 24. So, you know, kind of fits the type, at least as far as what Miami likes out of the draft, or maybe in the second round of the draft, somebody like Josh Richardson, who stayed in college longer, is a little bit more developed, maybe a little bit more mature, and being able to handle the pressures and responsibilities that Miami expects their players to handle. So that's an interesting twist, too. I mean, for a guy like Stokes, who's, like I said, already played for a number of years, you know, it's interesting to see where they are as far as their respective places in development. And I wonder whether or not Miami has a role for either of them in Sioux Falls.
Well, I did have the thought that, hey, the Heat just signed two big men that would probably play center in the modern NBA. Does that mean that they're going to be looking to trade Hassan Whiteside? Am I looking too much into that?
Yes. I think you've been banging that drum for a while, and I don't think anybody's dancing to the tune in particular. Sorry.
Well, the recent support for guys dealing with mental health concerns like Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan could also help strengthen Chris Bosh's legacy. We'll talk about that when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, in an article written by Jackie McMullen, Chris Bosh discussed some of the stress he endured when he first joined the Miami Heat in 2010, and how he was criticized for crying after losing in the 2011 NBA Finals. We talked about all of the pressure and unexpected criticism he got for joining a team with LeBron James and how he dealt with it. He was called soft then, but it seems people have been more understanding, not only of players moving teams, but also of just their general mental health. David, do you think that the recent support for helping players with mental health issues will help Chris Bosh's legacy?
Now, let me take a step back. First of all, if any of our listeners haven't read these pieces, it's a 5-part series on ESPN. Fantastic work by Jackie McMullen, not just addressing mental health, but from a wide array of angles, too, not to mention race relations, medication, even refereeing, and the kind of toll it takes on them as people. So very, very interesting. I'm curious to see where the fifth one goes. But either way, as far as Bosh is concerned, I really don't think it's going to help his legacy any. And that's unfortunate. I just think that he's a little bit too far gone, a little too far removed in the rearview mirror. And I don't know that anybody's going to go and take a look back and view it with this clear lens of understanding, knowing that perhaps he was going through some issues there, or that it's pretty understandable to go through these kinds of mental issues when you're dealing with the pressure and the scrutiny that Big Three team was. I mean, the Big Three team was so interesting and went through so much in their short span together. When you look at 2010, I don't know that any team in the future would ever go through the kind of vitriol that they went through, the kind of hate that was launched at them from 29 other fan bases. I've maintained that the 2011 finals was just kind of karma retribution to make 99% of the population happy, as opposed to just that 1% of the Heat supporters, because there's no reason why they should have lost to the Mavericks, and yet there they were. But either way, I just look at Bosh and the things that he went through, and I just don't know that anybody's going to say, well, you know, he went through a tough time, that should put him higher as far as the hierarchy of players or anything like that. I just don't know that anybody's going to see it in that quite that way. Do you really think that somebody's going to look at mental health and how we're changing our perspective, the narrative about it a little bit, and say, Bosh might have been a little bit more, I'm being more open to and receptive to Chris Bosh's career?
I do. I think it's not a conscious thing, though. I think it'll be more of a subconscious thing. I don't know that. Look, the big criticism of Bosch was that he was soft, right? You had Skip Bayless going out there and calling him Bosch Spice and stuff like that. And Skip Bayless would, he could fall off a cliff and nobody would care. But it would be that, just him saying those things, it was so, and that reflected a lot of what people and fans thought about Chris Bosch at the time.
Yeah, Shaq.
I think behaviors have and will continue to change in regards to how people talk about NBA players, right? And that's always the case. But as far as the mental health concerns and the soft label, I just think that that's going to be less of an issue and less of a just a way that people and fans define players. You don't hear people calling Kevin Love soft. You hear people defending Kevin Love.
And I don't know about that.
Of course, there are people that call him soft, right? But in the general sense of the people whose opinions matter more, and the when we really are starting to talk about these rankings, I mean, there's a reason. I feel like there's several reasons, but ESPN moved on from a guy like Skip Bayless. You know, there are more educated people talking about this, and people who think this game at a smarter level, talking about the game and ranking these players and things like that. And those are the people I feel like are leading the charge in these conversations.
Yeah.
And so, again, I don't think it'll be like, hey, let's stand back and redefine Chris Bosh's career. But, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when people are doing their top 100 players of all time and their Hall of Fame rankings and whatever they're doing, I don't think that people, when they're considering Chris Bosh, are going to be like, oh, he was soft. Even though that's what people thought when he was playing the game, I just think that label will shed from him, and it'll be more of a subconscious thing, and people won't even factor that part into the equation, where I think people now, or even a few years ago, do factor that into the equation and maybe do knock down Bosch a few pegs. I think Bosch's game is going to age really well, in the history of the game.
Sure.
And so I think he'll actually, his ranking could elevate, and it's for a variety of reasons, but I don't think that the soft label will stick with him going further.
I can agree to that. I think that's probably something that's ebbed away slowly. I think mostly for the reason that his health has been a question mark for so long, and I don't think I'm sure there are people out there that are cold-hearted enough to say, well, who cares that his life is in jeopardy? He's still, quote-unquote, soft. But I think those people are, as you said, their voices are growing dimmer and dimmer. Right. I just think that ultimately what they're going to judge Bosch and his legacy on is the fact that his production dwindled as much as it did in Miami. And I think the savvier basketball minds, you and I and others, would probably say, well, of course it was necessary for him to take a seat back as far as overall production is concerned, but he played a more valuable role, even if it was a little bit of a quieter one. So maybe that's...
Well, his advanced metrics are improved in Miami. So if this kind of advanced analytics kind of thing keeps going forward, maybe people will start looking at that more than just like the traditional points per game.
It's possible. I mean, and 20 years from now, maybe his legacy will be not that he was soft or anything along those lines, but he was one of the first guys to really stretch out the three-point line from the center position to play defense at a high level along the perimeter from the center position, and that he helped change the game. I think a lot of that credit, and deservedly so, is given to a guy like Draymond Green for helping unlock the Golden State Warriors dynasty, and maybe the Heat dynasty fell a little too short. It was too small a time period. But I think, again, we'll look back at that Heat era. We'll remember LeBron James, obviously, because his star burns brightest. And we'll remember Dwayne Wade because he is a Hall of Famer before that. But I think there's still questions about Bosch. And I think the best hope for him is that you could see him as being a very, 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 very good role player and hopefully a spark to change.
I wish that... for a lot of reasons, I wish Bosch was still playing and he didn't have the heart issues that he was having. But, the problem with Bosch, because of his career was ended so abruptly, we never really had that, twilight of his career, couple seasons to really reflect on Chris Bosch's career.
We're never going to have that. Like, so great, though.
Right? But you think of a guy like Dirk, who's just, not good anymore, but he's, out there as kind of, this monolith to what he was.
Yeah.
And so you just remember how good Dirk was. And Dwayne Wade now, and Tim Duncan at the end of his career, and Kobe at the end of his career. You just never, because they're on TV, you think about their careers more. And I just don't know that we're going to think about Chris Bosch as far as, what his career meant to the league. And all the things that you were saying, we were kind of, you know, that part of his career was stolen from not only him, but from people that could appreciate him maybe more than they did during the Big Three era. That whole portion of, like, the last few years when you just kind of sit back and be like, man, you know what, Bosch really – and then, you know, we didn't have the think pieces in, right, in year 16 and 17 of his career that of what Bosch meant to the game. Like, we were robbed of all of that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, robbed is a good word for it too, because I think there would have been so much more appreciation to see him excelling in Miami, carrying the team on his own and putting up pretty good numbers, because we would have expected him to continue to mm-hmm. be able to do so throughout his career. But then seeing the kind of person he is off the court with his family and his wide interest, the kinds of things that help flesh him out as a person. Yeah, the guitar, the coding, the anything, the ability to speak Spanish because he learned it because mm-hmm. he was here in South Florida. I mean, all these things, it would have been so great to see him kind of evolve as a person and as a player over the course yep. of that longer career. And unfortunately, I think fans across the country never got a chance to. I mean, as media, we got a chance to talk with him. And so we saw that a little bit more. And I think as long-term fans, but I think, mm-hmm. you know, another generation of fans probably isn't as aware, you know, about Bosch and his impact both on and off the court. So I'm kind of disappointed they don't get a chance to see that. But, you know, either way, he deserves to be remembered and remembered fondly.
And let's not forget that as soon as LeBron left, Bosch went right back immediately to scoring 20 points per game. Look at the stats. It's all right there on Basketball Reference. Went right back to being a 20-point-per-game scorer. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. A quick note before we wrap up. We are trying something new to help the show. We're going to start taking our mailbag questions from our iTunes reviews. This is an experiment that we're doing. So to submit a question for our weekly mailbag that we'll have on Monday, all you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, and include the question in your review. Going forward, we'll try to grab our questions from there first. If this works, it'll help our show climb the iTunes charts and organize our mailbag questions just on our end. This will be different from our recaps during the season, where we'll continue to answer questions and interact on Twitter and via email. And hey, if you don't have any Heat-related questions because it's the offseason, ask us anything. I just saw Guardians of the Galaxy, David, for the first time. I just watched the first two. I've got all kinds of opinions. Guardians of the Galaxy questions are welcome.
Yes, I will answer those gladly.
As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
I am Groot.
1st for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.